This is a Rabble Podcast Network show. New voices in your head. It's Radio Free Radio.
Welcome to Face to Face. This is a show about change and about what's next. It's a show that wants to ask questions, peel back the layers of our average everyday experience, and go beyond scratching the surface. We interview amazing people with incredible ideas and stories who have done wild, weird, and wonderful things. Remember that imagination shared creates collaboration, and collaboration creates community, and community inspires social change. I'm David Peck, and this is Face to Face. So my next conversation is about a film called Gunrunners. It's a great film. You need to see this movie. It's going to get a wide theatrical release here in Canada, apparently sometime in the fall. Angelie Nayer is the director. It's just a 10-year project. This is a film about friendship. It is a film about running. It's a film about a whole lot of things. It's a movie about life and about what it means to interact with our family and our friends and our communities and with others in a variety of places and in a variety of ways around us. So you're gonna learn a lot about filmmaking, actually, I think, in this interview. But you're also gonna get a better sense for what it means to actually listen. And I think that's certainly been a theme for me, not only at Hot Docs this year and the films that I've seen, but also as a development worker. And as I move and work in the Global South, the idea of listening to others is so essential to pretty much everything across the board. Better parent, better husband, better wives, better friends, if we listen to others. So thanks to Angelie for this beautiful film, Gunrunners. Check it out, National Film Board. There'll be more information online. And davidpecklive.com for more information on my podcasting, and you'll see some other great interviews there. We've got about 7 or 8 from Hot Docs this year. And check us out online. And this is Gunrunners. Well, welcome to Face to Face, and we are joined by another very special guest today, a filmmaker, a documentarian from Montreal, but someone who's currently now living in Kenya. Angelie Nayer is here to talk about her new film, Gunrunner. Angelie, thanks so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Yeah, it's always a privilege for me to interview filmmakers and especially documentarians, because the stories are just so, I don't know, layered and rich and nuanced in so many regards. And I would love to hear a little bit about, I don't know, I was speaking to one filmmaker about her film recently, and it started with her reading an article about music in the desert in Iran. And she reads this article in the UK, and then 5 years later, we've got a film premiering at Hot Docs. Can you talk a little bit about that sort of seed, that pebble that was dropped in the pond for you that started this splash and ripple effect around Gunrunners?
Absolutely. I was a journalist at the time, actually doing a CBC Dispatches radio story up in northern Kenya.
Okay.
And it was 2006, so that's actually longer than 5 years. It's 10 years ago.
Wow.
And I was on the finish line of this peace marathon for warriors and reformed warriors, and I met these two men, Julius Arile and Robert Matanda. And they were larger than life, and, Julius Arile had this wonderful gap-tooth smile, and he was so incredibly charming, telling me about his story, and Robert Matanda was telling me how he used to run away from police. Even like 100 kilometers. So these, 10-kilometer races were really nothing for him. And I don't think I really anticipated that I was making a film at the time. I was really, really just interested in their stories. Filmmaking, a lot of what it is, about filmmaking that makes it special is that you enter into another world.
Mm-hmm.
And just by standing there speaking with them for that short amount of time, I entered into this other world.
Yeah.
They brought me in. They were such fabulous storytellers.
Were they as a team? Like, was it the two of them together kind of hanging out with you, chatting in the moment, or were there these separate sort of conversations?
No, they were there together as friends.
Nice.
They were friends that were training together at the time. And I think that's how I met them. As friends, and I met them as friends who had known each other their entire lives and been through a very similar process up until that point. So, you know, I didn't really anticipate that I was making a 90-minute documentary at the time, but I really knew that there was the beginning of a story there and beginning of a conversation that I wanted to keep on having. And it wasn't until really a couple of years later, you know, that after we'd been friends and been talking on the phone every day, that we really realized that we were making a documentary. So that's really how it started. It started as friendship and just the ability to step into another reality.
And were you actually
storytellers?
Yeah, I love how you say you entered into this other story. Were you there to film a story for CBC, or were you there to write an article?
I was there to collect some sound, and I wrote a little news article for the paper. That's why I was actually there. But I was there to think about doing some stuff for the CBC radio. I hadn't done a radio piece ever in my life before, and I was kind of excited about the opportunity. So I headed up there with my kit and just was recording some sound and basically fell onto a story that took me 10 years to complete all the way up to the Hot Docs premiere.
Yeah, that's amazing. So, I love it. It's that's got to be affirming and encouraging to pretty much every filmmaker out there. It's amazing. So did you actually have a camera with you in 2006 when you met the two of them?
No, I did not.
And
would
you have called yourself a filmmaker back then?
You know, I was working as a journalist, as a foreign correspondent at the time. I had done documentary film. I studied at the Columbia University. Like I did the graduate journalism program. But I was working in different mediums and so on, but didn't have any of my own equipment at that time. It was before kind of really the DSLR, you know, phase where, you know, equipment became like affordable. So it really was a different time in filmmaking. And you kind of experience that through the film itself because the footage changes so much. The experience changes so much. The quality of everything changes so much during the course of those 10 years. But I think, you know, what that started on the end line of that marathon was just an understanding of two fantastic storytellers. Mm. And that really dictated how I made this film because as opposed to a lot of films from the Global South where you've got an intervening, you know, narrator or you have a really dictated storyline about a social issue, about something, I really just wanted to give them the microphone.
Right.
And I think that makes this special. And at least that's what my community of filmmakers really, really harps on and on about is how this is different from most films that come out.
Well, I mean, I think one of the trainers in the film actually at some point talks about Julius and says, you know, you could tell he's very special. And I think even as a viewer right out of the gate, within minutes of meeting the two of them, you get a sense the transparency, the authenticity, the humanity of these guys that they're almost unaware of the camera in a way. I felt like I was getting the real Robert and the real Julius.
Absolutely, absolutely. I think it's a few different things. I think one that's built on trust. You know, our relationship wasn't such that, you know, I had to try to get access to anything. I started with access. And so it was a situation where when things were happening in their lives, I knew about them.
Right.
I knew about what was going to happen tomorrow. So we could navigate that. And, you know, probably the most transparent scene is the family intervention scene. And really, I'd been hearing from, you know, Arile for some time that, you know, things were really hard at home. He kept on getting angry phone calls because the family wanted him to come home for a family meeting. And this is something that he always talks about, these family meetings. And I said, well, Arile, the next time they call you home for a family meeting, can I come along?
Right.
And so we showed up, and by this point we had a 3-person team, although for the first 5 years of the film I was filming alone. So we actually filmed that scene for about 2 hours. And although I speak Swahili, I do not speak Pokot. So, you know, I really didn't have any idea of the language that was being used for the scene, but the tension was palpable.
The tension comes through. Is that the one where the family and mom get together and say, what have you brought home other than these empty trophies?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. It's quite a scene. Yeah. Yeah. It really is. And it's actually hard to watch.
Yeah, and it's a very different type of emotion, right? Mm. So, mm. I mean, it's very difficult. I think, I mean, I have these two very charismatic and strong male characters, you know? And to get to that level of intimacy where they were telling me the things that confused them and that pained them and that, you know, that took years to develop.
Sure.
I think, you know, the first time that Arile told me about what happened to him when he was a child and why his family put so much pressure on him wasn't through an interview. It wasn't through a conversation. He was he was on his way to some marathon at some point, and he stopped in Nairobi and came to visit, and we had lunch or something. And he said, "You know, I've been learning to type a bit. And you can see in the film how poor of a typer he is."
Mm-hmm.
So he said, "I want to borrow your computer," and I said, "Okay." So I gave him my computer, and he went onto the balcony, and he started typing. And about 3 hours later, he was like, "Okay, I've got to go to my plane now." I said, "Okay, so we'll see you later." Later that evening, I opened the computer, and he had actually typed out this entire story of what had happened to him as a child.
Wow!
And it was like this revelation that I didn't anticipate. I didn't know if it was real. I didn't.
Yeah,
it was
sure.
So out of left field.
Right.
It was this little confession that he had left for me, you know. But that was the nature of, you know, and we then talked about it slowly. We went for, you know, a couple months later, we went for a walk, and I tried to understand these things, and it was really the piecing together of all those little moments.
Is this kind of the violence of his past, essentially, that came up that you weren't aware of up until this point?
No, it was the that he had gotten the neighbor's daughter pregnant,
and
that
right.
His whole family had blamed him for, you know, the poverty, that
right.
Blamed him for the lack of opportunity, had blamed him for everything.
Right, right.
And that's why they put so much pressure on him, because they feel like he has owed them from the age of 13, you
right,
know?
Right, right.
He
which kind of
the family, according to them.
Which helps to sort of explain that family situation, right? Or that scene, I guess, in the film. And also, I think for me, at certain points, I kind of was asking the question of, are these just a couple of irresponsible men that I'm dealing with here, that I'm watching their lives unfold? Or are these just really focused, committed people who are passionate, that want to change the world? And I don't think it's either or, I don't think. But I did sort of go, is this guy kind of, you know, shirking all of his responsibility? But when you start to hear the story and you get on the inside of somebody's life, you see the nuance, the complexity, the paradox. And it's mm-hmm. never quite that simple, really, is it?
It's never simple. And I think that becoming a runner, unfortunately, if you have all these commitments, if you have people calling you every day, I mean, you can't deal with that as a runner. Becoming a good runner is not only training, it's a meditation. In order to, like, actually get through, you know, over 40 kilometers on a race course is an incredible feat. In order to have the ability to sustain those quiet moments, I mean, you're talking about hours of headspace a day.
Yeah, well, it's crazy.
And if you've got difficulties, it is really, really, really tough to overcome them and still perform.
Are you a runner yourself?
It's actually, I grew up playing soccer. So,
oh, okay. So you kind of get it.
I absolutely get it. And I have run half marathons and 10Ks and so on, especially when I moved to Kenya. And who knows, maybe the marathon is to come.
Right.
Arile and I really, we joke about the fact that he, you know, could finish his marathon, you know, say if he was come to Toronto in the fall.
Right.
He would finish his marathon. He would go home. He would have a nap, go out to lunch, and then he would probably stroll back to the finish line, and I would be finishing about 2.5 hours later or something.
Oh, that's hilarious. That's pretty funny. Yeah, if it was me, come back in a couple of days, because I would have checked into the hotel about 20 kilometers back. Yeah, I would have been.
Maybe me too.
Yeah, I would have been in the hot tub at that point. Yeah. Yeah.
You would have just met him. You would have left the course and met him at lunch.
That's right. Please order for me, if you don't mind. I'll see great. You there. Yeah. So at what point, I mean, wow, 10 years, 5 years filming on your own, fascinating, amazing. I mean, and by the way, congratulations on the film. It's wonderful. It's beautiful to watch. I mean, the one, you know, that a series of establishing shots at the beginning, I so loved that opening sort of slow-mo shot of them running on their shadows.
And
I mean, oh, yeah, no, it's just, I mean, I just love that experience of being brought in on a variety of levels. And when you know you're going to be interviewing somebody, you're a little more attentive, I suppose, in a way. But but yet I also know that it's working on a whole other level as well, which I think is absolutely brilliant. Mm. But yeah, so congrats on an amazing film. I mean, there's a sense that I don't know what this movie's about, in a way. You know, if I showed this to my students at Humber College, international development students who are about to go out and hopefully change the world in one way, shape, or form, and ask them to write a paper on it, which I think would be a fascinating experience, I think we'd get a lot of different perspectives, which I think is brilliant. What I mean, this movie's not really about running, is it?
I think you've really hit it on the nail there. So many films that come out of the Global South are social issue-based.
Yes, right? Yes.
I mean, if you look at all the opening films at Hot Talks this weekend, gender violence, it's about, a lot of LGBT like issues.
Yep.
You've got everything is about an issue.
Mm-hmm.
And so often, you know, like when I'm walking around Kenya or with my friends or with Aurelia Matanda, like issues in life come up in the same way that they come up in Canada or in the U.S. or in Europe. Or in India, things come up and we deal with them, yeah. But to the kind of perception that everything is an issue, that poverty is an issue, that the gun trade is an issue, and that is the focus of the story, I think it does a disservice to the people and their experiences and the way that they navigate these things. And probably because I live in Kenya and it's my home, and these are two men that I respect and love. I tried to strip that all away and show it to everyone as the landscape on which these two men are really fighting, you know, are up against community pressures, family pressures, and really just are trying to, and their own personal, you know, failures and flaws, and really just trying to change their life, which is something that I think is the story that we're all going through. We're all trying to have a better life and make things better for our families and our children. And that's really what this story is about. So I think that sports is an incredible lens for transformation in terms of that, and that's why it's so important in terms of this storyline, is because we all understand to get to the, you know, the starting line of a marathon, you don't just rock up. It takes a village to get you there.
Absolutely.
And whether you're there trying to lose weight or whether you're there raising money for, you know, for somebody who's developed breast cancer, you're there for a reason. And I think undoing and kind of unweaving what it takes to get to that point and why you're doing it is really important, because that entire, you know, sports is such, it's really the journey. It's the hero's journey, and that's why it works so well.
Well, it's such a, on some level, such a simple metaphor, I suppose, for this idea of striving and change and getting back up after you've fallen down and so on. But it is also something that all of us can connect with in some way, shape, or form. There's a couple scenes where he's grabbing his side, I think even in the last few minutes of the New York Marathon, the stitch, and you're just kind of going, no, please tell me no, it's not, you know. And I mean, I'm no runner, believe me.
There's always a time to change.
Oh, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think it's a form of self-flagellation. That's what I believe. Yeah. Now, having said that, I like to bike, so I do exercise. I don't want you to think I'm just some sort of, sloth, but, I find the whole idea of running is just such a incredible, almost obsessive commitment, you know, and that really does come through in the film to some degree. And in fact, wouldn't you say kind of creates a little bit of tension in their friendship?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
In as much as this wasn't about a social issue, I also didn't really want to bring any talking heads in. And so whether things were true or not, I felt like the biggest critic of Aurelia Matanda and the biggest critic of Matanda is Uribe.
It's so funny.
They were their own reflection of each other.
Yeah.
And I really, really wanted the film to just be the experience of that.
That is such a great scene when they haven't seen each other for a while and they get back in the van and I don't know where they were heading, maybe to some training or something near the end of the film, and Robert is going on. I think it's after the election, and Julia says something to the effect of, yeah, he talks a lot, but he really doesn't say too much.
Yeah.
He would have made a great politician. Yeah,
yeah, I know. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I mean, that's really, I look at this, I mean, if you said, okay, well, this film isn't really about running. I think running is a tool. I think the guns and the idea of redemption is a tool.
Sure.
But if you strip it all back, it's actually, I don't know if you want to call it a buddy story or a love story.
Yeah, it is. It is a love story. Absolutely. Yeah, for sure. And what I love about it is, it's a story about community. It's a story about all of us. We are all in this crazy, beautiful mess together. That's what I see. And I don't think you have to reach to see that, you know? And I think it's brilliant that you didn't focus on the one issue in a significant way, yet made it a part of the story. Cause we're all in that same boat. I mean, you don't want to undersell it either. Because it's clearly something that my kids will never have to deal with, I don't think, based on the way things are going. But yes, we're all still kind of struggling through the similar issues.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it was very clear to me, especially as we started doing commercial screenings. You know, during the festival, we showed at Scotiabank Theatre, which is a commercial theatre, and watching the audience watch the film is incredible. The range of emotions and laughter and people taking off their glasses, in places that I didn't even anticipate, you know, halfway through the New York Marathon, and I don't want to give away too much, but there's so many things that are going on for people that I didn't even anticipate, that we couldn't have anticipated.
Sure.
And the power of the crowd in watching the film is really, really special. So I think that is what's really unique and what I'm really enjoying at this stage in the film's life, is just seeing the different ways that people are connecting to it, because there's so many different levels for people to connect to the film.
What do you think the film does for those of us in the West who don't get a chance to visit countries in the majority world, who don't get a sense for what it's actually like to, you know, just to see another culture, live within another culture, have to relate to people that don't speak their language and so on. I mean, I know people who haven't gone outside of Ontario, you know. What does a film like this say to somebody like that, do you think?
Well, it's interesting because I think every single person that has watched the film, you know, like in the audience and so on, people were coming up to me afterwards and really their number one comment was like, wow, you've captured life. You've captured this place in a way that, you know, that so few are privileged to capture people and their emotions and the reality of things. Because even if you go and visit Kenya today or, you know, Ethiopia tomorrow, the likelihood that you'll get this insight into community and culture and language and frustrations and vulnerability, especially of men, is quite unlikely. It takes 10 years to get there. And I think that's the opportunity, I suppose, for people that have never been to these other places, that, you know, love is different. It's expressed differently, should we say, in that family scene. The tough love or the tough emotion, there's so many universal aspects to those emotions, mm-hmm, but they're presented so differently.
Yes.
And to some extent, I was just an observer of that.
Right, right.
And I showed the audience what I was able to witness from my privileged position of having this wonderful friendship with these two men. You know?
At one point, Julius says that he dreamt about the future, but mostly he dreamt about money. Do you think that he was so focused on this because of that, I don't know, maybe a sense of guilt that he carried with him, or the sense of obligation that his brothers and family and so on had kind of laid on him. Obviously we don't really understand what the heck we're all about until we look back at our past and we make sense of it in a particular way, I suppose. But I just wonder, I don't get the sense that he was like, oh, I've got to get first place. I've got, you know, this is not about the trophies. This is not merely an ego thing for him.
No, it's not an ego thing. I think definitely the pressures are entirely from the community and from his family. And everybody wants a better life.
Yes.
And in terms of me kind of unraveling that, you know, from my conversations with Arelay, it went to a lot of our conversations surrounded, you know, when you're training 35 kilometers on a Sunday, and any Sunday, you know, what do you think about,
right.
You know, and what, and you know, when you are preparing for a race, when your race day, what do you think about? And, you know, that other day you said you didn't sleep well. Why did you wake up in the middle of the night?
Right.
So a lot of, like, what was going on in his head was something that we sussed out together.
Right.
We figured out together. And I think when he watched the film back, it was so, you know, the first question you ask when you're a filmmaker is, did I make any mistakes? And he said, no, I mean, you didn't make any mistakes.
Mm.
Like, we made mistakes.
Right.
We're the ones that made mistakes. And it was so interesting for him to be able to see that and have it motivate him in a way.
Sure.
Be able to, like, isolate the issues and the things that he was challenged by.
Sure.
And think about them in a new way and realize what he had to do.
So you clearly are very good friends with these two guys and their families, I would think, by now, after these many years. Did you ever get a sense as the filmmaker that, not that you were crossing a line, but that your friendship was impacting how this story was going to play out? Or maybe that's why the film is so intimate, you know, that you were able to, like you said, you sort of had the trust right out of the gate, you know? The access that you were given is clearly a testament to you as a filmmaker, but I think also to the level of friendship, I suppose, right? And camaraderie and a sense of inclusiveness, I would imagine.
Yeah, it's actually a really good question, and I think every single filmmaker wonders that at some point. From Arelay or Matanda's point of view, they're very stubborn men, and I think it would be really hard to get Arelay to do anything that he didn't actually want to do.
Probably true.
Yeah, but I've been so intimately involved in their lives and their children's lives and their wives' lives and, you know, just being there and being present for 10 years that I can't even begin to assume that I was, you know, that their lives weren't impacted by me in some way. You know, and I think that that's okay, because this film isn't really about, you know, what was fact and this was, you know, something that happened in a period of history. This is really their testimony. This is their story and how they remember it and how they are living it now and how they imagine it in the future. And that was the focus. There's no talking heads. There's no, you know, did this really happen or did this not? This is all about what they feel was their true story. And I think that changed over time.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when I asked them certain questions 10 years ago, very different than when I asked them 5 years ago.
Right.
Especially with respect to their friendship and the way they felt about each other and whether they were friends or not, or whether they were always friends or not, like the story changed.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on how they were feeling at that moment, you know, and they're very, you know, during the screening that we had in Nairobi about a month and a half ago or so, you know, that friendship had already come back, you know, and it was incredible to see. But, you know, for 2 or 3 years there, the idea that they were ever friends didn't exist, but it was just their memory and how they were perceiving things at the time. So I had to, like, understand where they were coming from, but also kind of know what my experience with them was and what their truth was at different points in their history.
There's such a great moment where you kind of start the film with it, but, you know, the you know, back and forth with a variety of different sort of storylines. But the UN aspect to this, that's really quite understated. And Kofi Annan's appearance and this petition that's signed. The thing that really kind of sent a shiver up my spine was when he was kind of congratulating Relay and saying, you know, good for you and thank you, et cetera. And the line was, you've given, basic, my paraphrase, Peckian paraphrase here, sorry about that, but you've given this issue or this, you've given this a million faces. Yeah. And I'm so glad you left that in the film, that you put that in the film. That did for me, isn't that kind of what Gunrunners is about to some degree? Isn't that what great filmmaking is about to some degree? That it's actually, you know, putting us alongside of others in a way and giving them a face and saying, you know, they're valued, they're included, they are part of this conversation. And I think too much of, I mean, when you look at what's going on politically and so on, it's so easy just to separate and divide, and it seems like that's what we do all the time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think as a filmmaker, I mean, that's the goal. That's like to really show someone's story and to show their growth and to show all the things that they've passed through. But the acknowledgement, and as you said it in that understated moment, that there's a million like it.
Mm-hmm.
But that Relay and Matanda, their story can be a representation of, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. of so many other people. And it was actually something that the film board said to me in early days, because, you know, my main guys when I met them were in their early 20s already, and the question came from the film board, you know, but there's so many other, like, why don't you get somebody who's, you know, now 10 and follow them for the next 10 years?
Right.
Or something, you know?
Right.
And the thing is that everyone's got a story, and if you're willing to listen.
Yeah.
And long enough.
Nice. So, yeah, I gotta say, you know, that's been one of the themes. The whole idea of being willing to listen has really been a theme for me for the last couple of years as a writer and a podcaster and a teacher and working in international development. You know, how willing are we to actually shut up and relax and just listen?
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell me a little bit. We're going to have to wrap it up here, I think, shortly. And I'm not sure. Are you sitting on another interview in the next little while? Or
let's just say that things keep moving.
Nice. I like it. 10 years, you mentioned that you got typhoid on the shoot. And, you know, 5 years on your own and then 5 years, I guess, shooting with a team. Can you talk a little bit about some of those challenges? I'd love to hear a little bit about that and how you sort of overcame it. It sounds like quite a crazy shoot, really.
Yeah. A lot of the first part of the film, when we were up shooting with the Warriors, and this is the group that, you know, my main characters, Relay and Matanda, had been with for, you know, all of their youth and so on. And during that shoot, when we were accompanying them on these incredible kind of intense moments, I came down very ill with typhoid. And we were maybe a 12-hour drive from Nairobi at that point,
wow.
Or something like
yeah.
that. So no, there was a local clinic, of course, no even thermometer and so on. And I had been, you know, running in behind the Warriors for this entire period. And then we got back to the little guest house that we were staying at. I just was so sore. You know, I had aches and pains all over my body, and I was thinking, wow, I must be out of shape. I should probably try to run more.
Gotta start training again.
Yeah, I know. I need to train more to keep up with these guys.
That's right.
And then I just realized how sick I was, and bless my team. They were, you know, so prepared for everything. One car went in one direction, 30 kilometers, and found a testing kit for, you know, malaria and typhoid, and another car went in another direction and got some vials of some old antibiotics of some description. And, you know, and then when those cars came back, they drove me 30 kilometers in another direction to find a nurse who could administer it. And he, you know, did, you know, it was very old school, some like, you know, slides of some description, some different color liquids, and we didn't really know what was going on. But as soon as I had the first shot, that was the road to recovery. But
wow.
It was a bit touch and go. I think as somebody who's worked as a foreign correspondent in Kenya and across the entire continent and also into Asia, that's definitely not the sketchiest thing that's happened to me. But each of these experiences just make you so appreciative of, like, a really good team.
Sure,
a really good community. Like, even you know, Matanda and Arile throughout this entire process, from removing splinters from the bottoms of my feet to who knows what else, have cared for me incredibly during the way. So it's always important to have people around you when you're working in those really, really difficult situations that are... they're going to have your back. You'll have their back.
I mean, film students could so benefit from you writing about the experience, from you, I mean, doing part two with me about the experience and just saying, here's how the heck we made this thing. I mean, it's fascinating. 10 years, that's incredible. I know, and, you know, that's not that odd for a documentary, but at the same time, some of the challenges that you guys must have come across, just even from a storytelling perspective, like you say about how perspectives change so much over a 10-year period and shooting by yourself, yeah, and sound and losing footage and all these kinds of things. It's just such a huge testament to your tenacity. And I mean, you were running a race, right?
I was.
Yeah.
We often think about it, and
yep,
you know, that whole idea of the race starts at, what, 35 or 37 kilometers. And that's really, you know, we even saw, you know, Matanda, my main character's political journey, really as a marathon for him.
Wow.
And that's our cool journey as a marathon.
So great.
The reality is, even that now that we've stepped over the slight finish line, you know,
right,
and premiered, the journey is still yet to come, because, you know, the film itself is going to theatrical in the fall.
Oh, that's amazing.
Over the summer in Australia.
Oh, good for
you.
A few
different cities in Canada, at least in Toronto, Montreal, and Vancouver at this point.
Wow.
So we're hoping that, you know, a relay might be able to get out to the Toronto Marathon, for example.
Oh, that's amazing.
To run, and then also to be here for the screening. So there's a lot left to kind of do with the film, and just in terms of the educational, like, the components.
Oh, and, absolutely.
It's... you know, just... The arms trade and the global arms trade, like the treaties for control arms, so many things that even though this film wasn't about social issues,
yeah,
I think there's so many different things
be applied to. The beautiful thing about it is, if you are willing, you know, your words, willing to listen as an audience member, if you aren't coming out of this with some kind of new light shining in some particular form of darkness in your own life, then you didn't mm-hmm. have your eyes opened. I mean, we got education, we got family, we got violence, we got gender issues. I mean, it's ridiculous, actually, in such a brilliant way. So, well, listen, Anjali, thank you so much for your time today. The movie is Gunrunners. Gunrunners is the American dream, Kenyan style, is a line right off of the National Film Board's website. What and when, more importantly, will it be released? So you say in the fall. Do you know yet, or is it the kind of thing that people just need to keep their eye out for?
Well, definitely we have some screenings, I think, in June, July in Australia.
Okay.
We've got the theatrical starting in Canada in end of September, early October, so please stay tuned to that.
Okay.
And we're hoping that, again, it will go all over the U.S., and it'll go over, like, around the world. So
amazing. Good for you.
The place is at Gunrunners Movie, the Twitter account, and at Anjali Nayar, my name, and we'll keep you posted.
Yeah, and we will put all of that in the bio, and I'll try to put a link or two. I'll put a link or two to the NFB site, and we'll do our best to get word on the street. Next project?
Next project should be out next year.
It's
still a very long journey. Liberian activist using technology to kind of break borders and change their world.
Wow.
It's another 5-year project.
You doing anything on, you know, anything comedic in the near future?
Well, the third film that is actually, we're probably entering post-production soon, is about an Afro-electric pop group that wants to go to space.
Oh, that's awesome.
So is that comedic?
I guess so. Yeah, no, I was just kind of making a joke about, hey, you take on serious stuff. I love it. It's awesome.
No, I take on life.
You take on life. Nice.
It's got its funny moments, and it's got its hard moments.
There's the T-shirt that I'll talk to the publicist, Pat, about, that NFB has to say, that she takes on life. Yeah. That's awesome. Well, listen, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate it. The film is Gunrunners. Angelina and I are with us today on Face to Face. Thanks so much.
Thank you.